Yeah, well, I'm back, and we're going to be joined by Brian Matthews. Brian is a career banker, and he became interested in fossils at the suggestion of a friend and got hooked. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Roy.
I found it fascinating that one... I find this whole thing interesting from a couple of standpoints. One, I once met a woman as I was walking through Central Park that gave me a little magnifying glass, and she said, "You know, son, you must stop for a moment and have a look at things." And she opened up one of these little leaves, and there was a great design inside it. So I can identify with that. But tell us the story on how you got hooked and where you ended up finding your nicest fossils, and then we'll go on from there.
Okay. Well, as you're aware, I live in Truro, Nova Scotia, eastern Canada. The opportunity to collect fossils here in this part of the world is not one of the most prolific, but it's certainly got some of the most interesting. I was given an opportunity to go to a place called Joggins in northern Nova Scotia and to look at what was called some fossil cliffs. And in those cliffs were actual trees. Tree trunks. They would probably be about 8 feet long, still remaining in the fossil cliffs.
But it was actually the tree trunk itself, not just an image.
That's right. It was the fossilized version of the tree trunk.
Okay.
And then I started just turning over some stones on the beach, and that was really eye-opening. There was fossils under rocks that I turned over, just impressions of a plant leaf, for instance, piece of a stem of a tree. And from that moment on, I was hooked. I knew I had to do something with this.
Well, you know, here on the Gulf Coast of Florida, both young and old stroll the beaches picking up these, what we call petrified shark's teeth along the way, and they're supposedly millions of years old. What's the difference for the audience and unknowledgeable people like myself, the difference between a fossil and something like a petrified shark's tooth?
Well, it might have more to do with age, and in this case, fossils generally are found, well, the ones in Nova Scotia here are about 250 million years old.
Right.
Okay, they're from the Carboniferous period, and they're all from plant material.
Right, and most of them are images other than, like, tree trunks, or?
What they are is a fossil is actually formed by the fact that a living organism was covered over.
Right.
Maybe in a mudslide or an earthquake, all the oxygen was usually removed from the site. It was covered that densely. Over time, many millions of years, the water flowed through the rocks. The minerals that were in the water replaced the molecules in the fossilized item, whether it be a plant or whether it be an animal.
Now, would an insect inside, would that be considered a fossil?
Well, it is, and that's formed slightly differently because amber is the fossilized resin of a tree,
which encompasses the insect,
right?
Or
and
some
amber
other
is a mineral,
right?
And the insects would be found. I have a piece of amber, and it's very indistinct as to whether or not there's really an insect in that or not.
Okay, but they're getting to a point where I lived in the Dominican Republic for a while, where they're getting a little bit restrictive on if you did find them with insects, whether you could even take them out of the country at that point. Now, you went off to the south coast of England, as I understand, and they call it the Jurassic area.
Yes, it's called the Jurassic
Coast. It's a coast, it's called, yeah. Now, tell us about that.
Well, that's on the south coast of England.
Right.
It's in the counties of Dorset and East Devon.
Right.
It's actually a World Heritage, UNESCO World Heritage Site, because of the unique geology and some of the fossils that are found there.
Now, what kinds of fossils did you find in general?
Well, by and large, what we were finding were marine fossils. And these marine fossils that were most abundant anyway in the area I was looking at would have been ammonites and belemnites.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
I can. An ammonite is a spiral-shaped mollusk. And so a mollusk being a marine animal, like a clam or any type of an organism that lived in the water.
Yeah, most people call them shells, but yes.
Right. And these were spiral-shaped. And in the spiral itself, the animal had its internal organs in the innermost part of the shell. It would have had tentacles at the outside of it,
right.
Maybe little feelers or antennas, and it would have used those to propel itself and swim by. Those
now,
are the ammonites.
Now, where did you see the image on the shell itself?
Yes, actually, they were perfectly preserved in pyrite, fool's gold,
right.
In the mineral. Remember I said they're formed from having the groundwater going through the actual organism itself.
Right,
so
exactly.
What they would have done was replace the molecules perfectly imaged in the shell itself, and right on the beach would have been found these little beautiful ammonites.
Incredible.
Some of them would be about the size of a dime.
But that had to be a real rush when you'd found one of those or more.
Well, it sure was. As a matter of fact, I was in one spot, and it was just a little tidal pool. And I found one, I could see the sun shining on it. It was exposed. And as I dug in the pool, you could come up with all kinds of them. Some of them were in poorer condition than others, but the ones
right.
that were the most beautifully preserved had a gold image around the outside of it.
How interesting. I mean, I've always been pretty much, very much into shells, living in islands and places like that. But I may very well have seen one and never even known the difference. Because I hadn't even looked for it. But again, like you say, it depends on the areas.
Right. Now, the next one that I found was really something that you probably would have walked right by. I happened to take a tour that day with a guide, and he showed us what to look for. And lots of times I should tell people, if you have an opportunity, go into any of the interpretive centers. Get a look first
right.
at what you might be wanting to find, because the untrained eye just doesn't know what it's looking for.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Where would you find this information?
You can find it. I had a beautiful little book that they published called The Official Guide to the Jurassic Coast. And there was also a website that you could go to that has the information on it. And that that in itself gave a lot of good information. And then they had a lovely interpretive center at the community of Charmouth, which was where I was the community I chose to go on. The Jurassic Coast stretches for several miles, probably 100 miles in length.
Right.
And I had to kind of specialize where I was going to look. I only had a day and a half to actually spend in this activity.
Right.
So I couldn't go to as many places as I might have liked.
Now, how does one get to this area? Do you need to fly into London and then go by other transportation to Dorset or East Devon?
Well, I'll try and orient you a little bit.
Okay.
It's about 3 hours southwest of London, driving. And you actually drive right past Stonehenge to get to it down the main highway.
Which is a good stop.
Sure is. There's a large community of Exeter, which was well known during the war for some of the bombing activities that took place there. It's a large community, and it's probably located, Charmouth would be located approximately 60 miles to the east of Exeter. You can reach it by coming down by train from London. You can take a bus down, or you can drive down as we did.
Now, what other area? First of all, you mentioned the time of year. Is there a best time?
Well, myself, I'm really starting to lean towards the shoulder seasons because I like the fact that you can be there in a quieter environment.
Right.
A few less people traveling. But any time from the spring through the summer is probably beautiful on the shore. We were there in September.
Right.
And it was still a beautiful month. The temperatures were 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, perfect.
Nice and comfortable. As long as you wore a jacket on the shore, if it was windy, then you'd be quite comfortable, and you certainly didn't need a jacket if it wasn't windy.
Now, what do you do with these fossils after you collect them? What would one do with them?
Well, England has a fairly liberal policy on collection. And I should say that wherever anybody is collecting fossils, you should always look up what are the restrictions, what are the regulations,
right.
and the code of conduct that you want for collecting. As long as you don't dig these fossils out of the cliff, then they're quite happy to allow you to pick them up off the shore, take them home with you. If you do find something that you think is significant, They would like you to take it back into the interpretive center, have a professional look at it, so that they can determine whether or not it is something that they might want to retain.
Now, is this something, you always see people wandering along the beaches everywhere in the world looking for whatever. But is this pretty well known that these are there, or is it just people who are knowledgeable about it that are searching for this particular specimen?
I think what's happened is you've found people like myself who are starting to travel a little more to places like this in search of exactly looking for fossils, if you've got an interest in it.
Right.
It's starting to become quite well known. I think it was well known even in the early 1800s. They've been collecting fossils there for years in a community called Lyme Regis, and there's actually quite a collection of dinosaur fossils there.
Right.
So it's not just the marine fossils, but they're pretty rare, and they're not something the average individual is likely to find without spending a fair bit of time on the beach.
Or knowing what they're looking for.
Right.
Well, you know, when I was it's interesting because when I was a kid, my parents lived in Venice, Florida, and we used to find all kinds of these shark's teeth, all different sizes. But then the commercial stores and that aspect came into play, and now I guess they go out very early in the morning with their so-called rakes, and when the average person gets down to the beach, there isn't much there until I guess the next day. I mean, there's still plenty, but not the best specimens, and that's unfortunate from the standpoint that you just can't seem to keep the commercialization away from your day-to-day living.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned that you have a book coming out. Is it a book that you're writing?
Oh, no, I don't have a book coming out. No, it's a book that I got to do with the Jurassic Coast.
Okay, and what's the name of that book?
It's called The Official Guide to the Jurassic Coast.
Okay. And
that can actually be ordered right online through their tourist center.
All right, and you mentioned a favorite website.
The website I looked at, and I found lots of information there, and it's updated quite frequently, is www.jurassiccoast.com.
Okay. Now, where is your next adventure for looking for these fossils? Have you got one in mind?
Oh, I sure do. I expect to be back out in Alberta next spring and summer.
Right.
I've spent 6 years out there, or 6 seasons out there, since 1996.
Lucky man you are. It's a beautiful area.
It's a gorgeous area. It's prolific as well. It's one of the best known sites in the world for collecting dinosaur fossils. And you can collect fossils, anywhere in the world. It's just that some places are much more abundant than others.
Well, I look forward to, you're going to do that this summer, is that the plan?
That's right.
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be interesting. Maybe let us know, maybe we'll come out and join you and have a look around.
That would be wonderful.
It's an interesting article, Brian, or interesting information on this, and we thank you for sharing that with our audience, and I look forward to chatting with you again. It's been fun.
My pleasure, Roy. Thank you very much.
Talk to you again soon. We got to go.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Brian Matthews. I think that is a very, very interesting subject. So listen, if you're going out, you're going to London, maybe you want to go on down to Dorset in East Devon and collect some fossils. And if you go to that website, it might just tell you what you'd be looking for. So I think that was an interesting point. I've got to go, and next week we have the president of KOA Campgrounds, that's kind of a tongue-tier there, and journalist Carol Matthews will be discussing Dutch treasures. Johnny Jett will be with us, so stay tuned next Wednesday to the Travel Talk Radio Network. This is Roy Lowy saying bye till next week. Talking Travel is brought to you by the Travel Talk Radio Network, broadcast live from Florida's Sun Coast and 24/7 online at TTRN.com. Now back to our regular programming.